This is Deanna, and our second guest today actually had a kind of a little family emergency and was not able to be on the program today, but he wrote a book. His website is jonathanbaylor.com, and he wrote a book, and the title of the book was How to Beat Diabesity, The World's Number One Killer. It's a New York Times bestseller, and he is also the author of The Set Point Diet, which teaches us how to change our diets and lower our body's set point to live a leaner, healthier, and longer life. And he says that most people hear the word diabesity and assume it's a silly made-up word. But it isn't made up. It's far from silly. It is a state of being obese and having diabetes, which is a very serious, deadly condition, and it kills more people annually than smoking, crime, alcohol, terrorism, plane, and car crashes, and all drugs combined. He states that 100 years ago, one in every 4,000 people were diabetic. Today, doctors at the Harvard Medical School estimate that one in four American adults are diabetic or pre-diabetic. That's a 100,000% increase, Baylor points out. And he also points out that in the past 2 years, that life expectancy has decreased for the first time since the Civil War, primarily due to obesity complications. And many leading medical authorities agree that the diabetes pandemic is the deadliest threat facing humanity today. And he says that diabetes is not caused by being lazy or stupid or eating too much or exercising too little. It is caused by an elevated set point. And he says that diet is everything. And he is, anyway, I recommend that you read his book. As I say, he will not be with us today due to a family situation. So what I thought I would do is just open the program to callers who can talk about anything that you would like to talk about, including the recent, State of the Union address, the Jeffrey Epstein. You can talk about anything that you would like to talk about. You can ask personal questions, anyway, talk about what you'd like. So let's take a couple of callers here. We have Tom in Utah. Tom? Tom is gone. Fred's gone. Do we have any callers? Okay. So anyway, we will open the phone lines. And of course that phone number, excuse me, is 800-313-9443. And as I was listening to, excuse me, as I was listening to the State of the Union address, I thought, wow, I've never heard him speak so intelligently before. And it was very well done. But then you actually have to admit or to understand that he didn't write the speech, that a very, very well-versed speech writer wrote the speech, and that Trump simply is a very good reader. And it was a good speech. And particularly interesting is that Pelosi tore up the speech, and of course you could see her do that, she was right behind, Trump. Now I'm not a big Trump fan, and I wrote articles about Trump, before he was elected in 2016. And, anyway, it's just very interesting. Now, somebody in the chat room said that my email address bounces back. I have two email addresses. I have Deanna at spingola.email, comments at spingola.email. I also use Proton Mail, which is very good, very secure, and my address there is deannaspingola@protonmail.com. Proton is Proton. And so, if you have trouble getting hold of me, then that's who you need to listen to. Okay. So we have Tom in Utah. Tom, welcome to the program. Tom, are you there?
There we go. Are we there?
Yep, I'm here. Not going anywhere.
Okay. Yeah, my battery dropped, and so I had to call back in.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, just as a little kind of side note, I'm going to have to quit acting because my stunt double has passed away on me.
Oh, my goodness. That's terrible.
Okay. Yeah, Kirk Douglas, my wife, when she married me, she said I look like Kirk Douglas. And in 1996, Kurt was a victim of a stroke, and Gretchen Weiler contacted me and had me come down and get with Michael and Kirk, you know, and help him put him on the path, and he got 24 more years of life. It's a pretty
That's good.
I mean, he died at 103. How's that for a successful life experience?
I guess it's good.
Anyway, I was going to comment on the previous host guest that you had. Most people don't realize that in the 50s, mid to late 50s, when the Salk and the Sabin vaccines theoretically came out and, suppressed polio, the real individual that suppressed polio in the United States, believe it or not, was Secretary of Agriculture Ezra Taft Benson. See, I just got into my medical studies right at the end of the 50s. One of my first responsibilities was to go out and examine cattle and livestock and check them for the titer, their levels of polio. We call it bovine polii. And in the late 50s, the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture had the farmers, and there were a lot of very unhappy farmers. We had the farmers call or quarantine those animals that had high levels of bovine polii. So the real suppression of polio in the United States was not Sabin or Salk. By the way, I found it rather interesting that we were using the Russians as the guinea pigs when these vaccines
right.
were being...
Well, now we are using people who are in, for both the clinical trials, we're using foreign populations because they have no civil liberties and no civil rights and no access to complain about what's happening to them. And it's terrible what the pharmaceutical companies are doing.
Well, in the United States, we were using prisoners and then, of course, military.
Well, that's what they're still doing. We are using captive groups. We're using children. We're using animals. We're using the military. We're using prisoners that are locked up. Maybe they I don't know whether they receive any compensation, but these are people who have no say-so in what is being done to them. Parents, or children, of course, have their parents, but if parents will not investigate or even read the ingredient list of those vaccines and question when it says aborted infant body parts or some of the other horrible, horrible things that are in vaccines, then it certainly it does not speak well for us as individuals, as thinking adults. We should be reading this stuff. And I'm speaking to myself also, although I did not give up my children all of the vaccines that they said they should have. But it's terrible what's going on. It really is. It's totally against just common sense.
Moral ethics?
Yes.
Well, what's really interesting, we were not looking so much as to the effectiveness of this vaccine against a particular virus, but we were simply really worried about the contraindications, including the death. We were looking for the contraindications from those vaccines. The management of the disease itself occurred in the livestock. That was already in place at the time the vaccines were being, quote, utilized publicly. So you were led to believe that the vaccine was what suppressed the incident of polio, but in fact it was the culling of the animals that had high levels of the vaccine particle in them. That's true of almost every disease, including measles, mumps, rubella, diphtheria, pertussis, tetani, typhus. The way we controlled that is by controlling it in the food supply.
Oh, sure.
By the way, I was discussing earlier today on the rural survival, explaining why they did not need to worry too much about the coronavirus. Well, the coronavirus is all the viruses that cause respiratory issues, the flu viruses. They do not survive in the air more than 10 seconds or less.
Wow.
Sunlight, oxygen, cosmic energy are the enemies of these pathogens that affect the animal kingdom of which you're a member. You are an animal, and the only thing that will attack you is something that will survive and in some cases even cause illness or sickness or death of the animals. Of course, I explained to them why aren't the animals going down with these diseases? That's because God in his wisdom raised their thermostat. A cow runs at 101 to 103. A pig runs from 103 to 105. A chicken and all the other fowl run at 107 to 118. So their temperature suppresses the activity of these pathogens, but also their temperature being elevated stimulates the activity of their immune system. So these organisms, when they're in a cow or a pig or a chicken, they're like trying to make somebody run a marathon in August. They don't want to run it, so they'll sit down under the shade of a tree, and they'll be dormant or docile, but at the same time, your immune system is now stimulated. So your antibodies go along and they find these criminals sitting under the tree. They take them out before they can bring harm to you. What's really interesting is every disease organism I ever cultured or studied in my lab has a prime temperature maturization of 98.6.
Well,
wow, that's interesting. Who's the only animal on the planet that
parents should allow a fever? They shouldn't try to bring down a child's fever because
exactly.
What fever indicates is that their immune system is responding to an invader, and that is a normal immune system response.
See, I tell my listeners or my I don't like to use the word as I did in the past, my patients, I tell them, put a wet rag on their head and let them go up in temperature in terms of their core.
Right.
Just keep their head, their brain cool.
Right.
And that way that elevated temperature will keep your immune system hyperactive, and it'll win the battle. And you'll develop natural antibodies. By the way, when we first developed, quote, vaccines, or let's put it right. The word vaccine, do you know what that means?
No.
The word itself is a giveaway, but nobody ever understands it. Vaccine. Vaccine. Vaca means cow or bovine. Scene is a Latin term for blood or tissue.
Yeah.
Vaccine. So what is a vaccine? It's cow's blood. Now, originally, that was fact. We did not inject it into your veins. We did a little scratch on your skin. We did a TB tine, like with the smallpox. Smallpox comes out of the cow. It's called cowpox in the cow. So we take a pustulate from a cow, wipe a little bit of pus on your skin, and do a little scratch.
Right.
That way you still have your immune barrier between you and that infection. So your immune barrier gets to work on it and develop antibodies the natural way, the natural immunization. See, I tell people, if you have a cat or a dog or a chicken, pet your dog, squeeze your cat, let your babies, you know, fondle that animal. And even if they have a chicken, pick up that chicken like my daughter used to do. I used to be a rancher dairyman. Pick up that chicken, handle it, and the dead organisms on the outside of that chicken or a cow or a dog, they will give you an exposure to that organism, but it'll be a dead vaccine. And it will be the natural way. It'll come from outside of your body. It will not violate your liver or your immune barrier. Your body will have the opportunity to develop antibodies or resistance in the case you accidentally or even deliberately contaminate yourself from that organism from the interior of the animal from which it was. So the fact is, you know, and you had that doctor die, and he was also sanctioned prior to that because he was starting to tell the people in China and that community, I'm concerned about this infection because he found it in the livestock. And when he started to mouth that off, the livestock industry, the market, the butchers, were starting to feel the economic threat. And that's the way this whole system is. Back when the 1918-19 flu, mm-hmm, came into the world, it began at the convergence of three rivers, the Ohio, the Mississippi, and the Missouri. And Dr. Cohen, a veterinary doctor, saw it in the pigs. He told the pig farmers, please do not market these pigs. But they turned a blind eye to him. In fact, when he protested, they protested with him, and they nearly beat him to death with a baseball bat. He was telling them not to ship their product to the fighting men in Europe. And, of course, they had contracts with the military because we were in the First World War. So the first cases of this Spanish, they misnomered it or named it Spanish so nobody would realize where it came from, but it actually came from Jackson County, Missouri. The herds right there, the pig farmers there were the primary foci. So as they shipped off their product to the boys, like at, say, at Fort Riley, mm-hmm, they became ill. And then, of course, the product was still being shipped across into Europe to the boys who were in the trenches or on the lines in Europe. So they fell prey to the pig virus. And then when their dead bodies were there, then the birds came and picked at them. The birds carried that infection to the population of Europe.
Well, you know that that one of the places that did not succumb to the the virus was the troops that were under Schmedley Butler, because he insisted that the camp that they were in be cleaned. He made sure that the soldiers received good rations, and so it also has to do with the environment as well.
Yes.
as receiving good food and cleaning up the environment so that you would not be viable to this.
Well, I wish people would read the book All Is Quiet on the Western Front and find out some of the techniques that the generals had used to keep their fighting men healthy.
Right.
It's just bizarre. And
right.
I don't want to offend anybody by telling them what's there. I want them to find out themselves.
Sure.
The fact is, these viruses, they don't fly through the air. They don't survive on a surface any more than a few moments. They have to be transmitted. They're not contracted. They're transmitted under the protective shield of cholesterol from one host into you.
Right.
Into you.
Right. And when you go outside your tent, for instance, during the so-called Civil War, the soldiers were urinating and defecating in local streams and right outside their tents. And so they got sick. More people died during the so-called Civil War from diseases than were killed by enemy fire. And also,
I will correct you a little bit on this. Your urine is low risk because it is so acid that the viruses
right.
and bacteria don't survive.
Right. But
you have to have blood or body tissues or fluid, mm-hmm. body fluids that are not acidic or not corrosive. See, saliva also is designed by God to be a lysozyme or to be a protector. So generally, spittle is low infection rate because there are enzymes in your saliva that will kill viruses and bacteria. That's mm-hmm. like the old Indians know that if you've got a wound, let your dog lick it. Of course, the dog has a much more powerful level of these lysozymes in their saliva than you do. But the fact is, you've been designed to protect the people around you, believe it or not. And see, I did say, well, you know, in Christ's time, what did Christ tell the apostles? Go into the room of a sick man, put your hands on their head, give him a blessing. And do you think Christ would do that if he knew that the infections were that easy to be contracted? The fact is, the ancients have known this, but we've been brainwashed to the fact that we can get a disease from being in an airplane with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I first started to talk to people, I said, put me in the airplane, fly me to that city in China. I'll sit down in the middle of the city. In fact, I'll go in their homes. But one thing I will not do is have an intimate tissue-to-tissue relationship with them. But as long as I don't touch their bleeding wounds or have a French kiss with them, right?
Right.
I will not worry, and I will not get that coronavirus, as they call it. And by the way, of those viruses are coronae.
Right.
So if you're worried about the coronavirus, number one, don't violate medical protocol. You know, most of you women, and you men too, they violate medical protocol. I would fire you if you were working in my lab or in my operating theater. Because you would walk in there and you'd think, oh, well, I can handle this cadaver and just wash my hands with soap and water. Do you think your physician can do that?
No, they had a lot of deaths because physicians were handling dead bodies and then going into and delivering children without washing their hands.
Well, not only was there the death of the children,
the
family of the
mother.
Doctor got sick.
Yes.
And sometimes even the doctor. I had I had to educate the physicians down in the Four Corners when the Hunter virus was plaguing the Navajos, Utes, Zunis, and Hopis. See, they were told by the Department of, CDC and BIA that they were being infected with the dust and droppings of the rodents. But I said, would you please watch these workers, these technicians from the CDC, as they're placing these traps under your trailers, and then they go back in and retrieve those traps. Are they wearing a spacesuit, a bio-level 4 spacesuit, or are what are they wearing? They would come back and say, well, they're wearing gloves and knee pads. I said, aren't they wearing a respirator? No. So I said, what do they know that you don't know? The fact is the dust and the droppings are not contagious or contaminating. They're not dangerous. The only thing that's dangerous is the blood and tissues of that rodent who's a vector of that hantavirus, but he's not the only vector. And I said, now, if it was in the dust and droppings, do you think that technician would crawl under your trailer without a mask on? And they began to reason. They said, well, it's not in the dust and droppings, so where is it? I said, it's in the blood and tissues. Now, what connects you to the rodent? I say, do you have any other animal that you can think of that eats the rodent, and then you eat it?
Yeah.
You butcher it and handle it. They first said, well, we have our dogs. I said, well, dogs are not very good at doing that kind of a rodenticide, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
What animal kills rodents, and then you kill it, butcher it, and eat it? And finally, they came down to the one that was the primary vector. That was their chickens. If you put a chicken in a box with a snake or a rodent, the chicken will always come out, and the snake or rodent will be in the belly of the chicken. So if the rodent is carrying the hantavirus, now where's the hantavirus? It's in the belly of the chicken. So when you butcher that chicken, you get the blood and tissues on your hands, and you might touch your eyes, your nose, your face. And I hate to say this, but I'm going to be a little bit open. I'll do it as a pathologist or a physician. I can get away with that way. You women are at high risk because you're preparing that dead piece of flesh on your counter, and then you have Mother Nature call. You go to the bathroom with the same hands that you were handling that cadaver in the kitchen. You fold up a piece of toilet paper, and what do you do with it?
Yeah, you infect yourself by wiping.
You dry yourself. And in your vulva, which is a perfect protection away from sunlight, oxygen, and the cosmic energy, these viruses have now found a new home. It may not sicken you. You'll just become a vector, and then you'll put your baby to your breast. Now where's the virus? You'll put your children in your arms, hug them and kiss them. You might be affectionate with your husband. As Paul the Apostle said, and nobody ever thinks about it, he said, touch not, taste not, handle not, lest in the using, one using as it's referred to in the Greek, one using we all perish.
Yes.
So when you're going to handle and prepare an animal, now after it's been cooked, okay, the virus and the bacteria generally are disabled or dead. But it's in the handling, the preparation, where you run the risk of infecting you and your family.
Wow.
So act like a doctor.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate it. Take care. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. All righty. We are back. I hate to interrupt that song. I love that song. All righty. Let's take Chris in Florida. Chris, welcome.
Hi, Deanna.
Hi. Yes.
Hi. Pardon me. I'm just having a phone problem here. Give me one second. Okay, great. The inserts for the various vaccines I posted in the chat room, and death is an adverse reaction. The majority of the vaccines you'll find. So when such is the case, that a choice needs to be considered.
Absolutely. And, thanks for posting those, Chris.
All right. And antibodies are nice to have, though they're not everything, as essentially was said in the last hour by Jeremy. But for those who do think antibodies should be mandatory, we should ask, why can't safe homeopathic nosodes, which are available for evoking antibodies for even more germs than our vaccines, and the resulting high antibody blood titer tests be accepted in lieu of risky vaccines that otherwise would be mandatory? I know that in some municipalities that they allow that for animals, but they charge an extortively high, extortively high fee in order to accept that blood antibody test level in lieu of a vaccine for their pet. The Telegraph, the UK Telegraph, a little while ago, about 2 months ago, had an article that was defaming the homeopathic nosodes. They said that they bought from three homeopaths who each charged £200, I believe it was, for nosodes that were allegedly a scam. But the article didn't even offer a claim that they conducted any tests finding that the nosodes failed to show efficacy. So it's just, that's the kind of stuff that passes as journalism these days. And the last caller, he mentioned the cholesterol envelope of viri, and that is dissolved, so that's the lipid envelope, meaning fat envelope, that can be dissolved by various means, like, of course, there are essential oils and all sorts of herbals, botanicals, but oxygen and ozone, being O3, is super oxidizing, oxygen molecule. But, anaerobic, as I'm sure you know, means an organism can't survive in the presence of oxygen. And that includes 99%+ of known harmful viri and bacteria and all fungus spores and all cancers. And there's a quick little anecdote of someone I know who got over hepatitis B within just a couple of days. Turned jaundice, diagnosed, got over it, got over the jaundice, had no fatigue, let alone being bedridden, which is normally expected for about 2 months. But just by taking Homazon, which has been available since the late 1800s, this magnesium peroxide, there are other forms of magnesium peroxide or similar forms of oxygenating magnesium. So, you can have short-term exposure, take magnesium peroxide or similar, the thing that will flood your blood with oxygen or similar antiviral products to make nuke a germ while you get natural immunity from it.
Also, if you breathe properly through your nose and not your mouth, you're going to get more usable oxygen in your body. And as you stated, cancer cannot exist in a body that has sufficient oxygen.
Right on. Yep. So it's key to oxygenate your precious bodily fluid. It's just amazing what you can do when you just level the playing field that way. And someone who hasn't developed antibodies for a germ can contract it and not know, because symptoms never develop, or they might start becoming symptomatic and quickly neutralize the germ by helping their body with, the oxygen therapies. Go to oxygenhealingtherapies.com for a lot more on that. And silver hydrosol or ionic silver, olive leaf extract, oregano and lemongrass essential oils, selenium. I like to take SEMSC forms of selenium, things like that that prevent viral replication, or, you know, zinc for, you know, certain viruses, different minerals are antiviral for different viruses that prevent viral replication. Colostrum, I like to get colostrum that's raised in the cows that produce it are raised in New Zealand where they're more humanely treated.
There's a particular brand down there that's very good.
It's hard to find it more lately, but I like 21st century, but it's kind of hard to find. I don't know if you have any recommendations. Then there are medicinal mushrooms, staying alkaline. All these things make your body inhospitable to germs. And, being alkaline correlates to a higher oxygenation, blood oxygenation. So all these things that, make us the ones who prevent or cause herd immunity when we're the ones who might have a better immune system and have a lifelong immune system, lifelong immunity to fight off these things. Anyway, that's all I have for you. You have any comments?
No, I have been actually engaged for the past year in energy medicine and have taken a year-long class. I have another year to go, but I've learned a great deal about the efficacy of one's own immune system and the nine energy. You actually have nine systems in addition to your circulation, your blood circulation system and your endocrine system. There are nine additional systems that you can work with in order to overcome physical issues and problems. And I must say that it's worked incredibly well. And so anyway, I'll have to talk about that at some point in time on the program. Yeah. But thank you so much, Chris, for your phone call and for the links in the chat room. Thank you so much.
All right. You take great care.
You take care, too. Thank you. Okay, let's take Fred. Fred. Where are you from? Fred in Michigan. Fred.
Yeah, I'm in Great Lakes State, right?
Yes.
So,
sure.
One of your guests brought up the air. There's a book that's never been revealed on this network. It's called The Ion Effect. The Ion Effect. A World War II ambassador turned me on to it in the late 80s. And it's quite astonishing. And from that data in the book, The Ion Effect, I began utilizing anionic or negative ion generators in the house. And let me tell you, I'm on a main drag, and when the wind is blowing from the south, and just like you may have heard of what's called the witch's winds, the Santa Ana winds, the Chinook winds in Colorado, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Germany and Austria, I guess it's called the Föhn. The guy, the ambassador told me about the Föhn. F-O-E-H-N or something like that. Anyway, he said that when the wind, the Föhn blows, the surgeons are wise, only to do emergency surgery because it's so easy to screw up, he said. Well, and that's because a lack of, negative ion is electron rich air molecules. And as you probably know from your energy medicine curricula, free radical scavengers in our body the endogenous compounds known as SLD, superoxide dismutase, catalase, and I think glutathione is also one. These are free radical quenchers. They donate electrons. Mm-hmm. Because when the mitochondria produces ATP, when it burns fatty acids or glucose, that process actually produces oxygen radicals that are devoid of electrons. Okay, so as an experiment that I did and have done every year, it's astonishing. I mean, I can go outside. If the wind is blowing out of the north, the air is fresh. It's refreshing, and it's fresh. If it's out of the south, it's the exact opposite. And so when I fire up the negative ion generators, also when I'm using the air conditioner in the summer and the furnace in the winter, the difference is astonishing. It is absolutely astonishing. And I know for a fact that any ambient environment, any enclosed ambient environment where you have, and by the way, if you don't know this, there's a company called Homaker Schwemmer. Have you ever heard of Homaker Schwemmer?
No, I don't think so.
Homaker? Okay, well, you need to know about them because Homaker Schwemmer, this is their 171st year, and they put out a catalog, an annual catalog. Whenever you buy from Homaker Schwemmer, like from the mail order, and you can get the world's best anionic negative ion generators from them, you buy it once, you never have to buy again. If it ever fails, you notify them. They send out a call tag. They replace whatever it is you bought free of charge. You buy it once, and you're good for the rest of your life. That's Homaker Schwemmer. And their negative ion generators are awesome. Okay, now, about vaccination. I contacted State of Michigan Public Health Department and got the assistant director who told me, this must have been 6-7 years ago, that in Michigan, it's only a recommendation. It is not a law. If I had children and I didn't want them vaccinated, no problem. They could still go to school. Okay? It's only because there is a financial incentive reward when the school district or the doctor meets a particular quota, the school district or doctor gets a monetary reward from the state. And if you don't know the name Judy Mikovits, have you ever heard of Judy Mikovits?
No.
Okay. She graduated magna cum laude, University of Virginia, 1980. NIH hired her. She became, I don't know if she's the director of their infectious disease department, whatever. She ultimately discovered that since the very inception of that program, including the Salk, etc., they had full knowledge of contamination.
Oh, of course they
full
did.
Knowledge.
Absolutely. Yes.
They okay, now here's what she did. She collated all the damning evidentiary proof. She published it in major science journals. I think it was 09 and 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what happened was NIH fired her, and then one day, deputy dogs came and handcuffed her and hauled her off to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, a week or 2 weeks after that, FDA folks showed up and said, look, hey, Judy, all you got to do is sign here on the dotted line, and all will be well. You go back to work. We'll give you we'll make you the director. You'll live happily ever after. You'll get a big time raise, yada, yada. She said, no, go fly a kite. So anyway, on YouTube, anyone can see it. Hopefully it's still there. You ought to interview this lady. Absolutely awesome. And when you see this, it's called PhD doctor fired, jailed, and broke. Because they even stole her bank accounts.
Oh, sure.
PhD doctor fired, jailed, broke. So then she and colleagues formed some national network, which I don't recall the name of. But a lady medical doctor by the name Suzanne Humphreys.
Oh, right.
Dissolving Illusion.
I've had her.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you very much. Her car rider, which they have provided a lot of very wonderful things, and their website has all these graphs and tells you when diseases actually were eradicated, and it's an amazing thing. And mainly, I was just cleaning up your environment, good food, good toilet habits, cleaning up, good food, good air.
Listen to this now, real quick. There is another PhD. His name is James Duke, and I learned about James Duke when I found a documentary called Hoxie, the Quack Who Cured Cancer, and then they had to rename it Hoxie When Healing Becomes a Crime. Peter Barry Chalka in Santa Fe. He's the producer of it. Absolutely awesome. All right. Well, this guy, James Duke, formerly with the U.S. government as a PhD ethnobotanist, he authored the book The Green Pharmacy and The Green Pharmacy of Healing Foods, two different books.
Wow.
You ought to interview him sometime.
Send me an email. Okay. I'm going to cut you loose and we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and let's take John in California real quick. We have just a couple of minutes. John? Is John gone?
Deanna?
Yes, John.
Hi. It's been a great show. I listened to it from the beginning. I'm sorry at the end. I can't match any information what all your people have given. I learn something every day from you and some of the other VNRB and a lot of other reading I've read over 40 years, and it's just, you know, phenomenal. The thing about Jonas Salk that Jeremy talked about was I didn't know about. But another thing, too, that just real quick, these politicians were coming up for election. I read about all these current and these new ones challenging, and they're all talking about affordable health care, and I'm saying, how do you define that? You know, you're talking about you can get all the drugs you want, anything you want from a doctor, how about natural and all this. And some of them have children who have gone through cancer they had to fight with to get all the proper care. I just think about myself. I said, you know, I feel sorry for you, but I don't think you have a clue what is going on with the health care. They want your money. They want to make big money, big profits, and you can't decide on what you want to do. I said, why don't you just say, I just want to an exam by a doctor, and let me choose what I want to take for my health. That's it.
Right. But then the big, well, you know, the ABC agencies and the politicians are all on the side of the corporations, okay? All of your, the political offices, all of the senators and the representatives, they're all in the pocket of Big Pharma, and it's unfortunate, it's sad, but those are the facts. Big Pharma has all of the lobbyists and all the money because as I mentioned earlier, they constitute Big Pharma. The pharmaceutical industry constitutes a major portion of the gross national product, more than any other product. We're not producing cars and other things here in this country anymore. They are producing drugs to keep us dumbed down, and they want to own our bodies. and make us patients for life. And that's how things are.
And yeah, well, like you said, yeah, these people, when they get elected, they always claimed all these guys are in the pockets. I said, you're going to get in there, you're going to be in their pocket too. And one
Absolutely.
Last thing I'm going to get off. I have a daughter. She's a scientist. She's a geneticist. She works, got a great job and all that. But yeah, she's studying this, you know, new stuff. And I'm not going to tell her, you know, what that might cause or that. You know, hopefully, she'll find out herself if they come out bad. I also have a grandson who's going to medical school. And I feel, you know, don't say I wish him well. I don't say I hope you don't be like the doctors are today. I got a feeling it will, because there's good money and the work's fine. So I don't know. All I can do is pray, and they come out, they see it themselves. Thanks, Deanna, and take care of yourself.
Thank you. You too. Take care. All righty. We're at the end of our Saturday program, and as I indicated at the beginning of the program, I'm very grateful for RBN. It's been a wonderful experience. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just telling you that gratitude is something that we should feel every day for all the blessings that we each have. Yes, there's garbage in our lives, but there's also a lot of good things. Take care, and we'll talk next week. Thank you for joining me today. Bye-bye now.